This is the Ben Shapiro Show, AM 770 KTTH, KTTH.com, live from the Online Trading Academy studio. Well, it's pretty clear the Obama administration does not take the threat of terrorism and Islamic extremism particularly seriously, but there's been little evidence until now of exactly how the Obama administration has shut down debate over that issue. Stephen Coughlin is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and a Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. He recently formed Unconstrained Analytics, Inc., a 501c3 dedicated to raising awareness of what constitutes a threat our leaders seem disinclined to recognize or even make an effort to understand. He's the author of Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. Stephen, thanks so much for joining the Ben Shapiro Show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Stephen, why don't you tell me your story from the beginning? You were in the intel business, and then what happened?
Well, as a reserve officer, my background was international comparative law and worked for some publishing companies, and 9/11 happened, and in September 2009, I was mobilized down to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I showed up in October. The goal of intelligence is to define the enemy as he defines himself. I like to tell people it is not my fault that the enemy we're fighting categorically states they fight jihad in the name of Islamic law, according to Islamic law, to implement Islamic law. Well, what that means is you have to know Islamic law. And I was asked to take that part of my analysis out of my work product to purge it. I refused to purge it, so they purged me. You know, what I like to point out is we think of the war on terror, and we think of what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, or now in Syria and Iraq, and we think that's where the war is. But for the people we're fighting, I think that they plan to beat us here by keeping us from being able to define who they were with enough clarity to be able to target the people we needed to identify for the purpose of engaging in hostile activities or just information campaigns.
Well, Stephen Coughlin, in your book, Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad, you specifically cite in a number of ways and instances in which the Obama administration has purposefully ignored basic things about the nature of our enemy. You specifically cite Hillary Clinton collaborating with the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. What exactly was that deal?
Well, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, a lot of people are not aware of. It's the second largest intergovernmental organization after United Nations. And when it meets at the summit level, it represents all 57 heads of Islamic states, or 56 Islamic states and the Palestinians. And in 2005, they came together and they came up with something called the 10-year program of action, which was to make defamation of Islam a crime in every jurisdiction, and that they would work through the UN to do that. In July 2011, Secretary of State Clinton went to Turkey to meet with the head of the OIC, a man named Ekmeleddin Isinoglu, to commit to him that she would use the State Department's best practices to implement what was called and is called UN Resolution 1618, that although it's stated in neutral terms, has the specific intent of implementing the 10-year program of action. How do we know this? The OIC says so. She then went and committed to the same international body that she would use some plain old-fashioned techniques of peer pressure and shaming. That's a direct quote on you, an American citizen who would stand up to someone challenging their right to exercise their First Amendment inside the United States.
And obviously, we've seen Hillary Clinton do exactly that. I mean, with regard to the situation in Benghazi, she pledged to apparently Charles Woods, the father of Ty Woods, she suggested to him that she would actually be interested in cracking down on a YouTube filmmaker who had the temerity to act in blasphemous fashion against the religion of Islam. And we've seen this over and over. President Obama going to the United Nations and suggesting that the future, actually to Cairo, and saying the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. The president of the United States has obviously been pursuing a policy of trying to pressure anybody who would say anything that could be even construed as negative against anything, including radical Islam. Now, Stephen Coughlin, in your book, Catastrophic Failure, you also talk about the punishment of American service members for failing to observe Islamic law. That's kind of shocking, and I'd never heard anything like that before. What do you mean by that?
Well, not quite that. What happened is there were some NCOs, American servicemen, in Bagram who were guarding a prison, and an imam asked them to destroy a couple Qurans because inmates were writing in them to pass messages back and forth. So the soldiers did that, and they did it according to the how Islamic law says you're supposed to do it, by burning them. Well, then all of a sudden, it seemed like the same people asked them to burn them and started becoming outraged. What happened is there was something called a day of rage, where there were riots and protests, and the head of Afghanistan, Karzai, demanded that they be punished. Now, at the same time that he demanded they be punished, he also acknowledged that there was no intent to do anything wrong. The military command in Afghanistan likewise did an investigation and found there was they had done nothing wrong. And yet, despite the fact that there was no intent to do anything wrong, and despite the fact there was a finding they had done nothing wrong, they were still given non-judicial punishment. And this would be an example of the demand to meet the standard exceeded what was known to be an unfair treatment. Absolutely.
It's amazing stuff, and frightening stuff, obviously, when the United States is even subsuming its military under rules that are not, and that have nothing to do with America's military rules. Now, you talk about how there's the national law enforcement has been kept in the dark about a lot of these threats, and that's had significant ramifications for Americans. Obviously, we've already seen what happened in Fort Hood with Major Hassan, and we've seen that there have been a number of homegrown terrorists here in the United States. But it seems like whenever people say homegrown terrorists, they act as though we couldn't have foreseen this at all. We have no clue where to look. What do you make of that? Is that just a lie that we don't know where to look?
I think it's just simply not true. In fact, if you go all the way back to Al-Waqi, Anwar Al-Waqi, to Major Hassan, to the Sarnaya brothers, to the people who struck in Garland, it turns out that our senior law enforcement had specific knowledge of who they were and that they were bad. They knew that Al-Waqi they had identified Al-Waqi as a terrorist when they watched him go into the Pentagon to brief our generals and assist them in the war on terror. They knew he was a terrorist when he was going into the Capitol building to do the Friday prayers. They had intercepted Major Hassan's emails with Anwar al-Awlaki, where he was committing himself to the cause. So, yes, this has been known for a long time. We say homegrown jihad. We say leaderless jihad. We say all this stuff. There is a form of jihad that goes all the way back to the beginning of Islam that's recognized and has standing in Islam called individual jihad. And individual jihad is a form of jihad that allows a person, when they hear a call for jihad, no matter where it comes from, if they accept it and agree with it, they can just stand up and decide to take action. And this is exactly what Al-Qaeda has been publishing in their magazine, Inspire, that they started putting out in English back in 2010 on a quarterly basis. In fact, 2 weeks before the bombing in the Boston Marathon, Inspire came out with a reprise of one of their editions, where one of the things they had in the magazine was a section called Build a Bomb in Your Mother's Kitchen. And one of the bombs was a pressure cooker bomb. We also find that a lot of these people who end up becoming terrorists, and then we brand them Al-Qaeda, whether it's Al-Amudi, whether it's Al-Waqi, whether it's Major Hassan, or the Sarnaya brothers, is they always seem to have also a relationship with an Islamic society mosque. Now, Islamic society mosques tend to be mosques that are associated with the Muslim Brotherhood through the Islamic Society in North America.
And this is very frightening stuff, obviously, for those who don't know it. From Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad, the author is Stephen Coughlin. And Stephen, you also talk about how both the Department of Homeland Security and the Justice Department have consistently worked with people they know have terrorist connections. You mentioned Anwar al-Awlaki. Are there other instances in which the government is working with people who obviously are connected with terror groups? And because the government is so eager to prove it's not Islamophobic, it's been moving toward working with those terror groups, even on issues particularly including terror.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, one that comes to my mind is Judicial Watch did a Freedom of Information Act on the Department of Homeland Security, Civil Rights, Civil Liberties Division. Back in 2010, when DHS was looking to stand up their CVE, that's Countering Violent Extremism, they asked to bring in a group of people to help them with it, and the people they brought in were overwhelmingly leadership elements of the Muslim Brotherhood. So when you see the DHS is doing countering violent extremism or violent extremism or wherever you use that term, my argument is when we're doing violent extremism, we're not doing counter terror. and we take a look at the people who we brought in to help us understand what violent extremism is, and they end up being leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, to include the person who was at the time, I believe, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood. He might have just been the vice president at the time, Muhammad Majid, who was or became the head of Islamic Society in North America. So, yes, we have clear indications that this happened and continues to happen.
Stephen, you're a senior fellow, obviously, at the Center for Security Policy, Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. And I need to ask you, is there any hope that we'll pull back from the brink on any of this, or is really the only way that we're going to change anything is if there's a new president of the United States in the White House?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm somewhat pessimistic in that I think that we're going to need a jarring event regardless of whether it's a Republican or Democrat. I have to say that some of I started briefing in 2010. How is it that we changed sides in the war on terror? And most of our senior leaders in the national security community didn't even understand that they did. I think that when you take a look at what's going on with ISIS and al-Nursa and the Brotherhood in Syria and Iraq, what you see is that everything that this current administration has done, you've seen people like Lindsey Graham and Senator McCain over there running point on it. So I tend to think that we have to not only look at, you know, maybe replacing Obama in the next election, an Obama person or a Democrat with a Republican. I think we have to look with someone who's going to make a purposeful decision to actually know who these people are, what their objectives are, and what they plan to do.
And obviously, that's going to be an uphill battle, given the amount of political correctness that dominates the society. The author is Stephen Coghlan. The book is called Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. Stephen, thanks so much for joining the Ben Shapiro Show. And thanks so much for standing tall in the face of a government that obviously doesn't want to hear from you.
Oh, yes, that's true.